Got to give a correction, Dusty, from the corrections department. My man Barry over at the Jagos. Don't forget about the Lakers three-peating. And you're like, yeah, they almost did it twice, right? And then the Celtics kind of got in the way. I'm surprised Mac didn't remember that being a diehard Celtic fan.
Well, I did, but I didn't
want
to say anything.
You should have.
Okay, next time I will.
Next time you absolutely jump in.
Boy, Bill Russell.
I just Google searched teams to win a three-peat. Bulls, Lakers, Yankees, Packers. From 1929 to 1931.
That doesn't count, right? Okay. I mean, does it? They were playing like the Providence Steamrollers.
Yeah, do we count the Bill Russell Celtics then?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
I would count them.
This is the Oakland Athletics three-peated 72-74.
They did, yeah. They were some pretty special teams. Speaking of that.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. What's going to happen?
They won a walk-off last night,
by the way. I know, right? Yeah. But, like, tomorrow, did you send it to me about the warning, right?
Yeah, they updated security. Yeah, but the New York Islanders as well. Green Bay Packers.
I did say the Islanders,
Celtics, Islanders. There's a ton on this list.
But how many are, like, in modern history? Like, when we talk about the NFL modern history from 1970 on, the merger on, or you can say the Super Bowl era if you want to go back to, you know, the 66 or something like that. But everything in the NFL begins in 1970. Doing something in the 20s, I mean, you had one other team that you were competing against, right? So,
yeah. I thought this team's name was the San Diego Soakers, but it's the Sockers.
Yeah.
I was like, damn.
They three-peated?
They five-peated from 88 to 92 in Major Indoor Soccer League.
Yeah.
I thought that was like Zach Wilson's team.
No.
Okay.
That's really good, though.
I got it.
If I-Y-K-Y-K on that one, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Sometimes I'll say that to my wife. Hey. But anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, the
three-peat.
And then you mentioned the A's, and I guess their security warnings for their final game at the Coliseum. I mean, I was listening to our guy Ben Maller the other day, and they were talking about, like, what to expect at this final A's game. Like, people are going in there and stealing all the seats. Anything that's not tied down, they're going to try to get out of that stadium and steal and keep. And you said to me, would you do it? And I'm like, yeah, I would take a seat out of that stadium,
what
right?
What do you need to take a seat out? Just like an Allen wrench or you can get into the game with that?
Well, that was my question. So
how do you get a wrench into a game?
So Bob Fesco thought about that. Okay. And here's how you do it. My dad, when I was growing up, had this thing on his keychain that was like a flat screwdriver. It had like four different edges on it that you could use as a screwdriver kind of in your pocket that he kept on his key ring all the time. So if they're just bolted in with simple screws, and based on that stadium it may be, or you could just rock them at that place and pull them out at that point in time, I think it's probably a lot easier to get a chair out of that stadium than most people are thinking. But I think it is going to turn ugly. I mean, the jackass owner of that team wrote a letter yesterday to the fans saying, oh, we tried, we're sorry it didn't work out, up yours, pal. Right, like, nobody wants to hear that, and so Thursday's going to be interesting. Like keep an eye on what happens at the Oakland Coliseum, because like when the K closes down and they open the new downtown ballpark or wherever they decide to build it, aren't you going to want a seat?
I mean, like,
they're good seats at Kauffman Stadium. Arrowhead, they can keep them, they're cheap plastic, but Kauffman Stadium's got nice thick seats.
I think it's hole six at Drum Farm, the golf course. I think it's a par three. And on the right side in someone's backyard, like close to the cart path, there's two old Kauffman Stadiums.
The orange ones.
Yeah, the orange ones. And I'm always like, that's how I would use those. I'd be like, you know what? Some random, like, you know, Sunday afternoon, I'm waiting for football to, like, start the 3 o'clock slate, walk out there with a cold beer and just talk to golfers and sit in my stadium seat. That would be cool, right?
Wouldn't that be cool, like, to have, like, if as a Kansas City sports fan, have a seat from Municipal Stadium, Municipal Auditorium, Kemper Arena, Arrowhead, Kauffman Stadium, like, have all those in your, like, I don't know, maybe I'm just a dork, but I think that would be kind of cool to have those old stadium seats. I've always, like, I could have had Kemper Arena seats back, like, they were just giving them away.
That's a conversation we have tomorrow. What would be your three things you would take from Kauffman?
Yeah.
I think fountain water would be up there high for a lot of people. I think a seat would probably be a big one. And then somebody might say turf, because I remember when they got rid of the AstroTurf,
they sold those.
Yeah, my grandpa had one of those on the wall, like on a plaque. I'm like, why did you want that? He goes, I don't know.
I don't know. I bet you do. Like, I will say this, and I'm not joking when I say this.
Yeah.
Binkley's Arrowhead turf is his most prized possession.
Really?
Yeah. He's got a piece of turf from old Arrowhead. That is his most prized possession.
That's amazing.
Cool. I mean, that's... You know,
I'd like to take the Crown Vision and put that in my house.
Sure.
I'd put that in the backyard.
Yeah.
Come on over and watch the game. What kind of TV you got? I got this Crown Vision.
Don't get caught on that. Poll question of the week that we have for you at the Fan 965 on X. I thought this yesterday. I've asked a couple people, and I knew it was a good question because it wasn't one of those, it's this guy, no matter what. Like, it wasn't a quick response. And judging by the 115 votes that we already have on this, it's very close. But there are two names in sports that I think will be the top of the trade discussion because their teams are ass. And that is Myles Garrett and Davante Adams. And I asked you guys yesterday, and I've asked a couple buddies of mine, if you could add one player on this Chiefs roster this year out of those two guys, who are you adding, Myles Garrett or Davante Adams? Right now, the poll question is divided between itself, as Myles Garrett has 49% and Davante Adams has 51%.
Are you kidding? It's that close. Wow.
And now there's only 98 votes.
What's the margin of error?
Yeah. I mean, look, would you rather add to this Chiefs roster this year? Because I do believe come week six, I believe we will see those two names up for discussion as guys that are, look, Davante Adams wants a ring. He's getting close to the end of his career.
Yeah.
And Myles Garrett's probably the third best defensive player in the NFL, maybe the second. I think it's T.J. Watt without a question.
Without a question,
and
he's
then you can
one.
Discuss Parsons or Garrett, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I look at it from both sides of the player. Myles Garrett joins this defense. They probably don't allow 17 points or more than 17 points the rest of the year. Right? You can go ahead and lock up Josh Allen with that defensive pressure. You can just absolutely destroy a run game. You'd have Omenihu coming back and by the end of the season after his
ACL. I haven't heard from him recently.
Well, he tore his ACL the worst possible time you could tear your ACL. He tore it like the AFC Championship.
Yeah, that puts you out the entire next year, right?
He posted something on Twitter last week.
It was, last week he did? Okay.
He did, yeah.
And my mind goes crazy when I think of Myles Garrett, Chris Jones, and George Karloftis mixing Wharton and, FAU and then Omenihu when he comes back. And
didn't even mention Mike Dana.
And I haven't mentioned him yet either.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I think of the other side of it where I'm like, well, Davante Adams. Okay. Davante Adams isn't the same speedy Davante Adams, but you'd essentially have two Rashee Rices on your roster, plus Hollywood Brown, plus Travis Kelce, plus a mixture in your backfield of Kareem Hunt, Isaiah Pacheco when he comes back, Carson Steele, and this offense might get back to that 2018 offense that was putting up 41 points a game.
Yeah, I'm going Myles Garrett, though, 100% on this one. That's my philosophy on that, because I think they're fine on offense. Everybody worries, early in the season about this kind of stuff. Convert one more field goal into a touchdown in all three of your games, and you blow everybody out, right? So I'm not that concerned by it. I just kind of salivate over the fact that Myles Garrett could be lining up on the other side of George Karloftis. And then you mentioned FAU, and then mentioned Mike Dana, and then you mentioned the interior of guys that we have. The way that Steve Spagnuolo is the most successful as a defensive coordinator is when he has depth and the ability to rotate on the defensive line and to keep those guys fresh. He's been doing it for over 20 years. That's what took down Tom Brady in that first Super Bowl with the Giants. It wasn't Eli Manning going out there and balling and playing his out his mind. It wasn't necessarily David Tyree's catch that gave you the opportunity to win that Super Bowl. It was the fact that they had doubly deep defensive lines that the backups could start for any other team in the NFL that year on the Giants. And you just rotate that talent in and they're constantly fresh. Steve Spagnuolo, if he was able to get Myles Garrett, would probably walk around as the proudest human being of all time going, oh my God, I've got legitimately now FAU, George Karloftis, Myles Garrett, and Mike Dana. Think about that four group of players right there. All four of those guys could probably start for just about any other team in the NFL, and now they're rotational guys here in Kansas City. How sick is that defensive line going to be, and how sick is it going to be to see Steve Spagnuolo take those guys and just do crazy things with them, and how sick is it going to be in February when all those guys are fresh along the defensive line and they're beating up whatever quarterback they're facing in that Super Bowl, man. So give me Myles Garrett on this team.
Gosh, yeah, I think that's more fun. I think the Myles Garrett's more fun.
Yeah,
I think
it is.
Because you can always double Chris, but now you can't. You can't double both Myles and Chris Jones. I mean, that would be absolutely just fear for the quarterbacks, but I'd go on the offensive side just because I think that's where quote unquote need is. I know it's not a need, but I think there's more help needed on that side. So I'd go Devontae.
They always say offense sells tickets, defense wins games. And that is the truth. Like, you need a defense to go out there and shut down the opponent, because I think points are becoming harder to come by in the NFL these days, right? We're seeing it right here in Kansas City. We're seeing it around the league. I don't want to hear 47 that Buffalo put up. They played against a Jacksonville team who quit after the end of the first quarter. And they probably quit after losing to Miami on opening day, quite honestly. Like, Jacksonville may not get a win this year. So I'm not putting a lot of stock into the 47 they put up. But, man, you go out there and play defense. What do we say? The 24 straight games this defense has allowed 28 or fewer points. Mm-hmm. That's insanity, man. You stop the opposition, you got such a much easier time to win a football game, and you don't have to put the pressure on your offense to have to go out there and score 30. So that's why I would go defense.
Somebody from the text line says, you think the Raiders would trade with us to help us? Doubtful. Hey, it could be a business decision. According to Antonio Pierce, some guys are checking out, and he's going to make some business decisions.
That's right.
The other thing, too, is that, like, I don't think the Raiders, I mean, you say they wouldn't trade with the Chiefs, but, I mean, look.
What if their best offer came from Kansas City?
Right. And then it says, be real, guys. Chiefs never pick up anyone at the deadline, so I wouldn't count on it.
Nobody
Terrell
does.
Suggs, Le'Veon Bell, LeSean McCoy.
Revis.
Terrell Revis.
Yeah, those were all like guys that
they were trying to get away.
Yeah, but they weren't like trade. I don't think any of those were trades per se, but nobody in the NFL trades. People act like the trade deadline in the NFL is this big thing, right, and guys are getting traded. It doesn't happen. It's more hype than anything. And it's also fun to talk about. Like,
yeah,
only people that trade are the Carolina Panthers, and look where it got them.
That's right.
Ooh,
Bryce Young. And they still owe the Bears another pick, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So again, and we're not saying it's going to happen. We just want to do a hypothetical for our weekly poll on the Fan 965 on our Twitter feed or X feed. 151 votes are in the 15 minutes we've had it up. 51% say Devontae Adams, 48% say Myles Garrett.
That's a close vote. I am stunned it's that close, quite honestly. I thought it would run away with Devontae Adams, right?
Yeah, offense.
And you know, people want to use logic and, you know, be like that kind of fan. This is a fun conversation that you're going to have with your boys at a bar. Would you rather have Myles Garrett or Devontae Adams on this team? And you're off and running.
Speaking of off and running, Trevor Lawrence's career is off and running the wrong direction. If you're the Jags, do you trade him in the offseason and get whatever you can for him and try to move on? Or do you bench him to try to maybe get some like courage into his mind, because he's 0 for his last 8?
Yeah.
He's had 53 starts and it ain't looking good. And I'm going to be upright and honest. I'll look directly in the camera. I was 1,000,000,000,000,000% wrong about Trevor Lawrence.
You thought he was going to be good?
I thought he was. I had him as my dark horse MVP last year.
Wow. Okay.
I admit that. Right. That's a receipt that I will show.
Cool.
I had him as my MVP last year as a dark horse winner, because I thought, okay, got to the playoffs, had a really shaky start in the first quarter, threw 4 interceptions, ended up throwing 5, still somehow beat the Chargers. And I thought to myself, okay, yeah, Dusty, that's probably just the Chargers collapse with Brandon Staley. And then,
but that's still a big comeback, bro.
Right.
Like I think we were all kind of, and then they came here and played the Chiefs tight in that
really
game,
tight,
you know?
And it's bad, man. He's lost 8 games in a row going back. He's gone almost 365 days without a win. They haven't won since Thanksgiving of last year.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And it's not looking great. It's going to cost his coach a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the funniest thing in the world is that, is Trevor Lawrence responsible for the failure of Urban Meyer's NFL career? And I had to think about it like you are right now. And I'm like, no, Urban was a scumbag.
Yeah,
but also,
he's a douche.
Like, maybe his quarterback really isn't good. And the guy that played in high school that never lost a game, the guy that won a national title as a freshman at Clemson, the guy that was number 1 overall pick, like we said earlier in this week, that the baseball coach in high school said, sometimes you get to a level of talent that you just can no longer compete with.
Well, and that's what athletes have a tough time with. And we've talked about this for years, is that when they get to the pro level, they just think they're going to out-talent everybody and they don't do the little things. I don't know if Trevor Lawrence is doing the things necessary on Monday through Saturday to get ready for it. I don't know the answer to those questions. His performance would tell you he's not doing those things. And when you get to the NFL or to Major League Baseball, everybody's a good athlete. Everybody has talent and everybody's better than you or as good as you. How are you going to be better than them? You've got to put in that work during the week. From his play, it doesn't look like Trevor Lawrence is putting in the work, because he's never had to. And a lot of times people have those moments where they wake up and they go, oh my God, my career's at a crossroads. I could choose to continue to go down this path and wallow in the minors or as a backup quarterback, or I can take my own career into my own hands and do those necessary things during the week. It doesn't look like Trevor Lawrence is at that level based on the record and the way that he's playing right now. And he's got the same exact number of Will Levis, the same numbers as Will Levis is putting up right now. Same exact numbers as Will Levis. They're both 0-3. They both have a 75 passer rating. They both have about 560 passing yards. They both have a horrible touchdown interception ratio, and they're not thrown for many yards. So I look at Trevor Lawrence right now, and I'll say this. If you fire Doug Peterson, then you need to trade Trevor Lawrence this offseason, because then it would be his third head coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
His third head coach in the NFL.
Right.
You do not want to saddle a new head coach with Trevor Lawrence as your quarterback. You got to move on from both of them. So if you're firing Doug Peterson, you need to move on from the quarterback as well.
Are you giving up all hope in Trevor Lawrence over there, Mr. Sam Darnold?
I'm not. Exactly. And that's the perfect example, right? Sam Darnold took a long time. He had some worse situations than I think Trevor's had, but Trevor maybe had the worst situation of all coming in his rookie year with Urban Meyer, but that's since gone. I mean,
that's gone. I mean, they won a playoff game with Doug Peterson, man. Exactly. Like that's ancient history in my opinion.
We saw him perform, I don't know, I don't want to say really well, pretty well, above average for a season and a half, and then 8 games ago in the regular season, it all went to crap, and since then it hasn't come back. I don't know. I'm not completely out, but, I mean, did you guys see that clip of him spinning away from no one?
Oh, yeah.
No, I've not seen that.
I'll have to send it to you, Bob. I mean, literally, it's a clean pocket, and he just spins into midair. I mean,
he's got to go.
Yeah, he's broken right now. He's broken. Yeah.
He's chasing ghosts and demons at the same
exactly
time.
Exactly right.
I thought there was a lot of slander for unnecessary reasons yesterday. I know Shannon Sharp was one of them on Tuesday, and I think somebody else on Monday, talking about how Joe Burrow's not a top 5 quarterback anymore.
Yeah, people were like ready to pounce on Joe Burrow, right?
I don't really agree with it, because he had a really good game against the Chiefs, and he had a really good game against Washington.
He did.
He played good against Washington. They didn't lose that game.
They didn't punt.
His defense is what it is, and this is Chris Canty on Joe Burrow.
When your quarterback has a chance to go win the game, he's got to win the game.
Fair.
And Joe Burrow didn't do that. Jaden Daniels did. That's the problem that I have. The Cincinnati Bengals, they have a very, very specific formula for how they're going to have to win games. They're going to have to be led by their offense. You know how I know that? How they spend money. The Cincinnati Bengals are top 5 in spend on the offensive side of the ball relative to the rest of the league. They're 22nd in cash spend on defense. Newsflash, the defense for the Bengals ain't going to be as good as the offense. The offense is what's going to have to win the day. Only problem is the Commanders offense with a rookie quarterback in his third start won the damn game. I'm tired of all the excuses for Joe Burrow. Oh, the defense let Joe Burrow. No, Joe Burrow let Joe Burrow down. Joe Burrow let the offense down. Joe Burrow let the team down. Great stats, great stat line. Oh, it's amazing. He's had all of these touchdowns, no interceptions. But what did you do when the game was in the balance? What did you do when the game was on the line? You know the answer is, it's not enough. You know how I know it's not enough? It's because your team doesn't have a win and you're going into week 4. The damn Carolina Panthers got a win before the Cincinnati Bengals did. Let that sink in.
Okay. Well, God, that's just a bad take.
Joe Burrow so far this year has a 70.9 completion percentage.
That's pretty damn good.
That's almost 15% higher than the NFL average. He's thrown for 746 yards. He's averaging 7.2 yards an attempt, 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions.
That's a really bad take by Chris Canty. Like, unbelievably uneducated, terrible take.
I understand that they're not winning.
The defense gave up 38 points and never forced Washington to punt. You took a rookie quarterback on the commodes and didn't force them to punt. And you're going to sit there and blame Joe Burrow?
Yeah,
isn't Chris Canty a defensive player?
Probably.
Right? Wasn't he an old defensive player for the Carolina Panthers, I think? So that's why he's blaming the quarterback, because he's an old defensive player that's trying to give the defense the benefit of the doubt. This defense, if I'm not mistaken, now you guys correct me if I'm wrong, Mac, it's okay, right, to correct me if I'm wrong. Fire it out there. Factually, not opinionally, but factually, if I'm wrong, you let me know. But I'm just looking. Joe Burrow's defense got blistered by the New England Patriots, which is a high school offense at best. They committed a major personal foul against the Chiefs at the end of the game to give the Chiefs the opportunity to win the football game. And then they gave up 38 points to the Washington Commodes. And Chris Canty has got a job at ESPN, and he's sitting there blaming Joe Burrow? That's just an asinine take by Chris Canty.
Fact
That's
check
stupid.
True. Fact check true.
The, all good? Yeah, I wasn't true. Wrong in any of that.
Look,
and if I am, tell me.
I don't like Cincinnati. I like Joe Burrow, though, so I'm not going to let people slander a guy. Just like whenever Aaron Rodgers does something good, I will admit that he did something good. He looked good against the New England Patriots. Congratulations. Let's see how you do in this next week.
Right.
But you look at Joe Burrow's, the two biggest things that affect the Cincinnati Bengals this year, which is their own fault. The franchise, not the quarterback. They did exactly what they should have done with Joe Burrow and signing. He got him to a Super Bowl and beat Patrick Mahomes. How many people actively right now can honestly say that they have beaten Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs? One.
One active person and one broadcaster.
One guy. Not only that, his defense is bottom feeder in defense. Like they have
bottom feeder.
Points allowed a game, 26. They're allowing 26.7 points per game.
That's Burrow's fault.
They're allowing 142.3 rushing yards per game. And they are 28th in the NFL in rushing. You know what's happening? They're able to score on offense. Mm-hmm. They're able to pass the ball and be productive with Joe Burrow and those receiver, with those wide receivers. Jamar Chase, T. Higgins eventually will come around. First game back, had almost 40 yards and four receptions. Thing is, they ain't running the ball, and they ain't stopping the run.
Right.
So if they can't burn clock and they can't stop clock, they're running out of time, and they're not able to keep up with other teams and get a lead. Again, you can blame Joe Burrow if you're just a hater. That's fine. But to say that Joe Burrow is not a top five quarterback is an asinine take. It is a terrible take. It is not an accurate take. He's a top five quarterback, and he's probably the third best quarterback in the NFL.
You know, that take by Chris Canty is what gives sports radio sometimes a bad name, right? Mm-hmm. And I hate stuff like that because we had Todd McShay, which we'll get to in our next segment, say maybe the most slanderous thing you could ever say about Travis Kelce.
Right.
And then Chris Canty coming on board screaming that Joe Burrow is at fault. And I'm just like, God, it's not a good take. It's not an educated take, and it's not a right take to sit there and that's, you know, opinions like that are why people look at sports radio and go, oh my God, it's just a bunch of blowhards out there. But you know what? It's not. It's sometimes people are just uneducated and want to go with an opinion that just doesn't make sense, and that's where Chris Canty falls into that category. What platform is he with?